Chapter 2. Nick. 2 hours later, Jack found himself aboard a plane heading toward Beijing. The United States fleet of C-37B aircraft was typically the domain of senior officials, such as cabinet members and senators, who enjoyed the privilege of expedited and comfortable travel for matters of national importance. For someone like Jack, a former regional security officer of an embassy, to access this exclusive mode of transportation was practically unheard of. Under ordinary circumstances, he would have been relegated to commercial flights, often juggling multiple layovers, navigating chaotic airports, and enduring cramped seating arrangements. Despite being able to seat up to 12 passengers, the only other people with him on board the C-37B were the pilot, the co-pilot, and a single flight attendant who kept himself discreetly in the back. The fact that this flight seemed to have been explicitly arranged for him was not lost on Jack. It was a clear indication that not only was his expertise considered vital to the mission, but also that the urgency of the mission could not be overstated. As Jack looked around, he was struck by the elegance of the interior. The cabin was spacious, with wide, sumptuous leather seats that fully reclined, allowing passengers to relax and rest on lengthy flights. Each seat was equipped with entertainment systems and noise-canceling headphones, ensuring an enjoyable experience during the journey. Ambient lighting and warm wood paneling completed the aircraft's luxurious design, and a fully stocked galley offered a variety of meals and refreshments. The plane even featured a private lavatory with a shower, ensuring its occupants could arrive at their destination refreshed and ready for action. Jack took a moment to appreciate the rare privilege he had been granted, while also grappling with the weight of the responsibility he was about to shoulder. He reached for the briefing package and pulled out a folder with two dossiers inside. He opened the first report, laid back in his chair, drew a measured breath, and began to read. Barely a few lines in, he was jolted upright and stared at the page in front of him in disbelief. Nicholas Mahoney, the deputy chief of mission of the U.S. Embassy in China, had been found dead in a blood-soaked bathtub in his apartment in Beijing. Processing what he had just read, it dawned on him why he was called back to the front line. Not only was the deputy chief of mission the second highest-ranking U.S. political representative in a foreign country, and an unnatural death was thus ample reason alone to activate all possible channels, Nick also had been Jack's friend when he had been stationed there. While their interaction became less frequent since Jack had left China and had by now been reduced to the annual Christmas and birthday greetings, Jack was aware that Nick had a health scare a couple of years back and had taken a sabbatical to get back on his feet. Yet, Jack had no reason to suspect that his friend had been so severely sick that it could have prompted him to end his life. And indeed, while there was no sign of a forced entry or fight, Nick's body was absent of the usual wrist lacerations expected from a bathtub suicide. Instead, a cut along his abdomen appeared to be the source of the blood. While it was theoretically conceivable that the wound was self-inflicted, the unusual placement of the cut made murder the most logical conclusion. Jack read through the remaining report of the likely crime scene, but further details were sparse. Nick's body had been discovered not long before Susan's call reached Jack in San Diego, and an autopsy was currently being performed at the Institute of Forensic Science in Beijing. In a concession to the U.S., China had allowed an American medical examiner to be present during the autopsy. However, given that the U.S. had no authority to investigate on Chinese soil, further investigations would fall under the jurisdiction of the Beijing police. It was thus critically important for the U.S. to quickly understand the actual reasons behind Nicholas Mahoney's death. If the murderer's motives were personal and disconnected from Nick's position as the deputy chief of mission in China, the event, while tragic, could be considered an isolated incident. In this scenario, the U.S. government would likely opt to refrain from direct participation in the investigation to avoid a potential diplomatic controversy. If, however, the murder purposely targeted the second highest-ranking U.S. representative in America's strongest global competitor, the ramifications could be severe. For one, the U.S. would request that they investigate the case in China itself, a request likely met with heavy resistance from Chinese authorities. Even if such a request was granted, sharing details of this case with Chinese officials would compromise the integrity of the information, thereby diminishing the chances of solving the crime. To make matters worse, if such a U.S.-led investigation were to reveal that the Chinese had targeted a high-ranking U.S. official for assassination, it would undeniably necessitate the need for a strong response from the United States. This, in turn, would quicken the already ongoing transition into a new Cold War that would compel nations worldwide to take a stand. Yet, as serious as the situation as such already was, it was not sufficient reason to warrant Jack's direct involvement on the ground. While his old connections and insights into China's and Beijing's diplomatic landscape were undoubtedly valuable, the current security detail of the embassy would be sufficiently competent to handle the scenario. At most, they might have relied on Jack to provide his thoughts regarding the situation without flying him over. No. His vast expertise as the former regional security officer in China was only part of the equation. What actually prompted Jack's direct involvement was his personal connection to Nick. Nick had not been an easy character and had had his share of problems that Jack needed to care for when he was still stationed in China. Problems that the ambassador knew about. Laura was undoubtedly banking on Jack to leverage his intimate knowledge of Nick's personal life and his old connections in China to clarify if somebody might have killed him for personal motives. Jack had to admit that she was onto something. Nick had been a complex character, a modern-day Hemingway in many ways, whose demeanor had often rubbed people the wrong way. He had been fiercely intelligent, passionately committed to his job, and stubborn to a fault. Apart from his professional life, he had been a master storyteller gifted with a charismatic flair that captivated people, while at the same time possessing a melancholy that had expressed itself in bursts of insatiable passion for life, embracing every moment with lust and enthusiasm, often to the detriment of the people around him. Jack thought back to the beginning of their friendship. He had just recently been assigned as the regional security officer to the U.S. Embassy in China. It had been this relocation that had been the final straw for his ex-wife to leave him and take their daughter back to California. The loss had left a void in Jack's life, both at home and within himself. To cope during the day, Jack threw himself into work, which had earned him the respect of his colleagues. To cope at night, Jack threw himself into the vibrant nightlife of Beijing. The city's myriad bars, restaurants, and lively venues became his nightly escape, a distraction from the nagging emptiness. The seemingly all-consuming lust for life resonated with Nick and formed the foundation of their friendship. However, while Nick's tendency to squeeze every possible experience out of every day was a fundamental part of his character, it was just a temporary means to cope for Jack. It had been this combination that had inevitably led to instances where Jack found himself stepping in to shield Nick from potential harm. Jack let his mind drift back, a sad smile appearing on his face as he relived a memory etched in his mind like yesterday.
"Here's to another day of diplomacy," Jack raised his glass.
"And to another successful day,"
Nick echoed, his speech slurring slightly from the drinks they had shared. Jack and Nick sat in a trendy jazz bar nestled in a winding hutong. They were both fans of live music, and Nick had a penchant for jazz, which reminded him of his days back in the States. As the night wore on and their inebriation grew, Nick's diplomatic caution decreased, and his attention was captured by an attractive woman at the bar. She was dressed elegantly, captivating Nick with a radiant smile. They hit it off instantly, exchanging pleasantries, and Nick seemed increasingly smitten with her. Jack, however, didn't allow the laid-back atmosphere to compromise his professional judgment. As he observed Nick and the woman, he noticed subtle signs that hinted at her true profession. Her periodic glances and almost unnoticeable head signals to a man watching her from a distance were clear signs. He rose from his chair, navigated the crowded floor, and gently pulled Nick away.
"Nick, we need to talk."
"What?"
Nick turned around, annoyed.
"Nick, the woman you're flirting with, she's a working girl."
"What?"
Nick looked at him and back to the woman, realization settling in. His face reddened and his voice rose.
Is this what you and your people do? Trick us at every opportunity? He bellowed at the woman, his voice drawing attention from the entire bar.
Nick, this is not the time, Jack tried to intervene. Ignoring Jack, Nick spun around to face the crowd.
Trying to cheat us at every corner, aren't you?
He was shouting now, waving his arms around in a drunken stupor, his anger pointed indiscriminately at everyone in the bar. The room went quiet.
Goiza, a young man mumbled next to them. Nick turned to him. What did you say?
The man stood up.
Young Goiza,
he repeated, this time with conviction in his voice. He was small, but looked Nick straight in the eyes. People stared, a few rose from their seats. The situation was spiraling out of control. Jack grabbed Nick's arm.
Nick, let's go, we've had too much to drink, he pleaded, but Nick was beyond reasoning now. You can't treat me for dumb, I won't let you.
He shook off Jack's hold and turned back to the man, his fists clenched, ready to fight. With no other option left, Jack acted. He drew back his arm and landed a punch square on Nick's jaw. Nick's eyes rolled back, and his body crumpled, slumping into Jack's arms. As Jack guided his friend to the ground, the tension within the bar faded. Jack looked around the room and let out a sigh of relief.
Sir, lunch would be ready now. May I serve it to you? Sir?
Jack looked up at the flight attendant who stood next to him and shook off the memories.
Yes, of course, thanks, Jack replied.
Jack reached for the second file, a dossier on Nick himself. The report was preliminary, thrown together in the midst of the crisis. It started with Nick's profile, a standard document the Diplomatic Security Service provided for all senior personnel. A detailed, yet judging by the formatting, hastily assembled overview of Nick's personal travel itinerary and banking activities over the last years followed. Taking a deep breath, Jack dived into the first part of the report. It chronicled Nick's career trajectory, which was marked by a series of commendable accomplishments. Starting as a young diplomat, he had swiftly climbed the hierarchical ladder thanks to a combination of aptitude, resilience, and dedication. His assignments had taken him to numerous countries, each one contributing to his global outlook and building his expertise in diplomacy. Eventually, Nick had landed his assignment as the Deputy Chief of Mission in China. As Jack expected, this part of the report was including Nick's propensity for breaking protocol. The only notable new information was concerning the reasons for Nick's sabbatical. The report contained Nick's written request to take some time off, stating multiple symptoms, most notably common episodes of fatigue and weakness accompanied by loss of appetite attributed to a presumably looming burnout. To get back on his feet, he had requested a 9-month timeout that had been granted without further conditions. Apparently, Nick's decision had paid off and he had returned rejuvenated, reflected in an exceptional surge of productivity at the embassy during the last 2 years. After finishing this part of the report, Jack moved on to the seemingly routine and mundane section, a detailed record of Nick's travel record and bank transactions. Initially, Jack expected it to be as commonplace as it appeared, providing no substantial insight into Nick's life beyond his work. However, as he started reading through the lists, he discovered oddities that sparked his curiosity. Part of Nick's travel history seemed oddly inconsistent with his character. Among the flights that could be traced back to his work duties, multiple trips to Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Hong Kong, all considered to be among China's economic and political epicenters, where Nick likely attended conferences, visited the Chinese-based subdivisions of U.S. companies, and traveled as a diplomatic envoy, there was an unusual cluster of flights with extended stays to Urumqi and Kuala, two rather unremarkable cities in the Xinjiang Autonomous Region, China's westernmost province. These seemingly had been personal, not official trips, as according to the flight records, Nick had made these journeys alone. Those were not places someone like Nick, known for his love of lively company and bustling cities, would usually be drawn to. Curiously, the first trip started roughly 3 months before Nick's sabbatical. Another anomaly that matched the timing of his unusual travel itinerary was in Nick's financial records. Multiple transactions were made to different accounts spanning roughly the same time period. Taken by themselves, each transaction was minor,
but within the context of Nick's unusual travels, the total amount during that time span was significant. These irregularities presented a side to Nick's life that Jack hadn't been privy to. The remote province, the solitary trips, the unusual money transfers, it was a jigsaw puzzle missing its pieces.
"Damn, Nick, what have you gotten yourself into?" Jack pondered. The C-37B, a symbol of luxury and privilege just minutes ago, now felt more like a catapult, launching him headfirst into uncertainty.